Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to TV's Top 5, the Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast. I'm Leslie Goldberg, the West Coast TV editor, and I'm joined by the great Dan Feinberg, THR's chief TV critic. How's it going there, boss?
Just quiet week, Leslie. Quiet week.
Well, the upfront presentations weren't as bonkers as the week that preceded them with all the renewals and cancellations and new series pickups, but there were plenty of narratives to go around. You're listening to our 170th episode, and this is the All Upfronts Edition. All Upfronts Edition.
Edition. Edition. Edition. Edition.
Uh-huh.
Was that dramatic enough to sound like it could have come from the New York stage of the upfronts?
It was probably more dramatic than the situation mandates. I mean, I feel like we're about to spend the next hour talking about how very, very silly this entire week has been. But if you want to start it off with some, you know, some gravitas, let's.
I mean, I've been up since it was dark out this morning, so why not? I'm feeling a little punchy. Let's go.
We should definitely get down to business, whatever that is.
Yeah, well, let's start off with headlines. This is not going to really be the same formatted episode that we normally do, but there were a number of announcements that stemmed from the presentations this week, but a relatively surprising lack of major news. There's no Grey's Anatomy spinoff announced from the stage the way there was a few years ago when Station 19 was revealed. Instead, the biggest headlines that came out of upfronts were Helen Mirren and some dude named Harrison Ford starring in the Yellowstone prequel 1932. They weren't, however, among the all of the Yellowstone franchise stars that took the stage at Paramount's presentation. Edie Falco did, however, join Pete Davidson in the NBC Universal presentation. She's been cast opposite the SNL favorite in Peacock's Bupkis. Dan, you want to take a couple others?
Sure, why not? There's a Rick and Morty spinoff coming, and that's bound to be very, very exciting for fans of, well, I'm guessing Rick and Morty. This one will be an anime series based around Rick and Morty, and of course will be on Adult Swim. In news that will be of amusement to our Jewish listeners and perhaps other ones as well, but Sacha Baron Cohen, Greg Daniels, and Mike Judge are teaming up on an animated comedy for HBO Max based upon the philosophically quirky world of Chelm and the Chelm stories. And I'm just going to keep saying Chaim. Anyway, I'm actually kind of looking forward to that. When you initially sent me the news, I didn't actually read it. I just saw Sacha Baron Cohen, Greg Daniels, and Mike Judge, and I thought, okay, sure, fine, you know, whatever. But then I saw what they were actually doing, and I thought, oh, that's amusing. Why not? I hope it's not anti-Semitic. So, because it's one of those things where you could either treat the material with a respectful way, and it would come across as culturally specific and of deep meaning to those of us who actually grew up with various Chelm stories, or you could make it into a bunch of caricatures. And, you know, with Sacha Baron Cohen, he honestly is capable of going either way. And so I will be very curious, but I'm definitely engaged.
In other headlines, there were probably the biggest pilot pass of the season was at ABC, which declined to pick up its L.A. Law sequel. So that was obviously from showrunner Mark Guggenheim, who's a former attorney and described as his passion project and what the heartbreak of getting this passed over meant in a really moving blog post about the experience when someone says no to your dream, effectively. So, and outside of upfronts, the biggest headlines, you had Black Mirror is officially returning for its sixth season on Netflix, and HBO renewed Barry, no surprise, for its fourth season. So there's your week in headlines, really.
Yeah. And if you feel as if Bill Hader has been telling people that he used the time in quarantine to write the fourth season of Barry for about 2 years now, you're correct. I found news reports going back to early 2021 where he was like, yeah, I used the time to we used the time to write season four also. So, yay, it was renewed for a season that they already started making. I love it when that happens.
Those are the big headlines of the week. And now we can kind of go either section by section. So leading off, we're going to take a look at NBC Universal's upfront presentation.
Number one.
So we're going to start with NBC Universal. But one of the things that we're going to talk about over and over again is that there's always been an established format for what the upfronts are. And so an executive comes out and an executive talks about the great year that they had at the network. And they say the thing that they're number one in.
Claim to be number one at a variety of made up things.
Exactly. And then sometimes they'll do a little nod to the ancillary divisions. And back in the day, your sports or news counted as ancillary divisions in some of these things. And then the executive would be like, okay, but what you're really here for is the presentation of our new shows. And now we're going to go night by night through our schedule. We're going to tell you what's new. We're going to tell you what's at mid-season. And then we're going to watch clips for like 15 different shows. And that was the way that this has been done, certainly for the entirety of the 20 years that I've been covering this as a thing. Yeah, that's not what this year's upfronts were. This year's upfronts were like sending a telegram to tell people about the importance and relevance of cassette tapes.
A-tracks, Dan, A-tracks.
If broadcast television has become the A-track of the media world, that's entirely its own thing. Yeah, no, this entire week felt to me like, and I've described it to you like this, like a chicken running around with its head cut off, where it's just running around on electrical impulse, not in any way on sentience, not in any way on actual value. I'm accustomed to running around my yard in this way. And until I bump into something and die, I'm just going to keep doing it. I don't know that necessarily anything that happened this week counts as bumping into a wall and dying, but that chicken can only run along for so long. And for the record, yes, people can go to their, go to the internet and find stories about that headless chicken that lived for like 7 years. So if we're still talking about upfronts in 7 years, you just know that the upfronts haven't run into a wall yet. And anyway, so yes, NBC Universal started off, and we're going to talk about how several of these networks did actually show schedules, but only several, not most, not a majority. So
some.
And two.
CW did. I mean, the CW, we'll get to this one too, but the CW was the most traditional out of all of the presentations because, well, what else do they have?
Exactly. CW totally treated this as a normal thing, which was also sort of funny because it's not a normal year for the CW. So with the CW, it was a business as usual.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
We just canceled half our shows.
but whatever. Here it's our schedule. And here it's the Supernatural guys, just like it's 5 years ago. But on the other hand, that's an approach, and I don't know what else they could have done. They couldn't have been like, yes, we are in absolute, total, complete limbo. We don't know what we're doing here today. So instead, they gave the impression. But where do you want to start with NBC and how they chose to handle the strangeness from their end?
I mean, well, first of all, we're going to start with NBC because they went first, and that's kind of how my mind works. So no fall schedule was part of the NBC Universal presentation. Instead, and you'll hear us say this a couple more times, it was a portfolio approach. You know, if you are a loyal listener to TV's Top 5 and a friend of the five, you know that all of these companies have moved and reallocated their financial resources to their streamer. The same is true here. So you saw Susan Rovner, Jeff Shell take the stage. There was no press call for the first time that I can remember. And the footage that they really showed, they showed a lot of Peacock stuff first. So you had Sam Ismail's The Resort, which looks great. The new Matthew Fox show for Peacock. They did show footage of Quantum Leap and Night Court. USA, which was the formal The former cable ratings behemoth was an afterthought and just plugged WWE. But, you know, for me, it was just like, yeah, we're here. This is what we've got. You know, here's a couple of things that might be promising to you with big, you know, big trailers with a couple recognizable stars. We've got some sports, but there was no Lorne Michaels. If it were me running this, I would have wheeled out Lorne Michaels and the entire cast of SNL and illustrated with that kind of star power how much of those stars remain in business with NBC Universal with other projects, right? Tina Fey and the cast of Girls 5 Eva, Kate McKinnon with the dumb Tiger King show. Obviously, Pete Davidson was there with Edie Falco, like I mentioned. MacGruber is a thing that people liked. Has that been renewed yet? I can't remember.
It has not been renewed.
Out Dick Wolf in like the 7,000 people who work with Dick Wolf on his six shows for NBC Universal and the other things that he's got in the hopper.
They brought out, there were Dick Wolf people. I vaguely remember Sam Waterston and a couple other people intoning things ominously. Mariska Chris Maloney. They were there.
Right. But when was the last time Dick Wolf made a public appearance?
That is because God love him, Dick Wolf.
He's a recluse. I know this. He like spent the pandemic, you know, in like a bunker or something. You know, that's the funny rumor that's been going around for the last 2 years.
But also there's a limit to how much you want Dick Wolf bullshitting with your advertisers and how much Dick Wolf wants Dick Wolf bullshitting with your advertisers. And I think the answer to that is zero.
But you're not really. Yes, this is a pitch for ad dollars, but it's also you're trying to get people to buy into what you as a larger company are doing. And to me, the two biggest people that NBC Universal has are Lorne Michaels and Dick Wolf, and neither were present.
I mean, you're obviously right about that. That just was not.
And you look at what their streaming service is, right? Peacock, so much of that service is built around SNL repeats and the Dick Wolf libraries, plus next day episodes of all the current shows, right? That's 90% of your service right there. Anyway, but to me, both of those could have been better than whatever the hell that BravoCon song and dance number that they did was, which, yeah, that's like permanently etched into my memory.
The BravoCon song and dance number was grotesque, but I think that's exactly what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be one of those things where if it was speaking to you, it would speak to you. It did not speak to you. It did not speak to me. I thought it was excruciating.
I don't think we're the definition of Bravo viewers.
As I will always say, I watch Top Chef every week religiously. It's one of the few shows that I actually legitimately watch live. Admittedly, I pause 15 minutes so that I can buffer through commercials. But I do watch it on Thursday night, which I can't say for a lot of other shows. No, look, what the point of that was, and it was a point of a lot of things that were going through the rest of the week, were, look, we might not be able to boast about the audiences for a lot of these things, and we might not be able to admit what the ratings are, but the people who like the
things, or how many subscribers Peacock has,
or something like that, but the people who like the thing that we're selling like it a terrifying amount. And that was what the takeaway that I got from that dance number was. It was the people who care about this are insane. Therefore, if you can latch on to their insanity, you can make/spend money on it. And that was all it was there for. It just happened not to be a thing that spoke to either of us in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, was that more or less, I don't know, desperate, sad, out of touch than whatever strange thing happened immediately afterwards with Chris Collinsworth bantering and doing a little dancing himself, and then The Miz coming out and yelling? Because as I said when we started this segment, it used to be that sports was a thing that you gave 10 minutes to at your upfront because there was money in it. This year, everyone was leaning on sports because
who said it? I think it was David Zaslav in the Warner Brothers Discovery presentation where he said sports is the new primetime.
Exactly. Oh, he's definitely not wrong. That, I mean, more than anything, that's kind of the takeaway here is
must watch live.
It's much watched live. And so eventually the possibility that upfronts will cease to be about scripted programming in any way, shape, or form, and will just become here's what we've got live this year that maybe you want to be involved with. Maybe that's what it's going to be like, but that's a lot of what this felt like, is a lot of people talking about sports, which people watch live, and news, which people watch live, and everything else, meh.
Well, I think I'll disagree with you a little bit. I'm not undercutting about sports and news, but what I do think scripted will always have a place at these presentations as long as they have these presentations. But one of the things, and we'll get to this in the Disney segment coming up, but I don't think it's going to matter what platform they're promoting, right? You know, we talked a little bit during the Disney presentation when they had that like huge reel of different promos all cut together into like one super sizzle reel of a bazillion different shows. Most of them were unrecognizable because they're new. They haven't been out yet. And none of them said the title of the show. None of them said a premiere date. And none of them had what platform or network they were launching on. So at this point, when the piece of these presentations that is disappearing and will probably continue to do so over time is broadcast. Because that's just one, as you said, one small piece of the pie. And it's not even the piece with all the walnuts in it, you know, or all the pecans in it. I don't know. This is a bad pie analogy. I like pecan pie. That's all I can think of right now.
Pecan pie is great. I call it pecan pie, but that might just be regional. That's obviously true because, you know, for years, the narrative was over and over again. No, seriously, broadcast is still the best bang for your buck. It's still the best way to get in touch with your viewers, with your ad dollars and all of that. This year, I don't think anyone tried claiming that. I don't think anyone was trying to say, you know, even the broadcast networks that actually have things to celebrate weren't trying to say, oh, yeah, broadcast is where it's at. No one did that. So my question then becomes, this entire dog and pony show is built around the broadcast schedule. It's all built around the traditionally pilot season is the spring. Then we announce our stuff at the end of the television season, which is the end of May. So here's our new stuff. That's why we're doing this now.
Yeah, because, you know, all the new cars started rolling out in September. And that's why the new fall season starts in September, was because the automakers would buy ad time on the network to sell cars.
But so if all of the things that this entire process is built around are outmoded and bordering on meaningless, like that thing you just said about new cars coming out in September and the thing I said about broadcast television being relevant, I suspect we have young listeners whose brains just exploded by the idea that these are things you could base schedules around. And so this is a hugely expensive, hugely time intensive, multi-day event that's based around a lot of contingencies that don't match any industry in 2022 anymore. So
right. But I think, you know, as I've been thinking more and more about these presentations, you know, I just did a big analysis that posted about why the broadcast networks weren't center stage at these upfront presentations anymore. And in thinking about it, it's like, well, why are we having the upfronts? Well, all of these platforms are all going to have tiers that have advertising on it. So it does make sense to continue to do this. Does it make sense to do this in the middle of May? No. From a broadcast perspective, absolutely not. Because, you know, I crunched the numbers as I am prone to do this year. You know, coming in, there were a mere 35 pilot orders this year, which was a 10-year low. And then that trend continued. The total series orders across the networks, again, another low for the same period. After averaging nearly 40 pickups a year for the last decade, you had 17 new shows picked up collectively from all five networks. And the reason for that is they've all shifted to year-round development. A lot of it because of the pandemic, a lot of it because of reduced budgets, because the shift has been, all those dollars have been reallocated towards streaming. So does it make sense that that broadcast wasn't a huge part of the upfront presentations? Absolutely. Do we need to keep doing the upfront presentations in the middle of May? No. Do we need the upfront presentations as a whole? If you want to sell ads and meet advertisers, probably yes.
And I don't disagree with that. Like there's a reason to get these companies together with the people who provided the money that allow them to do work. No question about that. Whether it requires a major reconsideration of how they're doing it, when they're doing it, why they're doing it, I think that is probably true. But, you know, if they all do it in the same week, it allows the advertisers to come to New York and stay for a week and whatever. But as you just said, and as I've said now 50 times, why it has to happen in the middle of May, it's based upon a central premise that is no longer relevant. So what do you do? You either continue along and wait to bump into a wall, at which point you either die or do something different, or I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how this can be done cheaper. I mean, obviously it can be done cheaper because the past couple years.
I mean, look how many cast members from these new shows took the stage. Outside of the CW, not many. So that's a reduction in your cost because you're not paying for talent travel. You're not paying for hair and makeup. You're not paying for lodging, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, definitely I haven't seen quite the, you know, the normal level of red carpet coverage. That's always been a thing that, you know, people in our field have gone to New York for at this time, as you do red carpet coverage and you do your first of a series of banal interviews with the stars of new shows where they have nothing to say because they haven't shot anything other than the pilot. And then you do the exact same interviews again at press tour. And then you do the exact same interviews again at Comic-Con and you do the exact same interviews at premiere week. So this is kind of the start traditionally of a banal news cycle. And instead, somehow it wasn't there. And so, as you say, many fewer stars. I don't know. There were some musical performances. Nothing was as big as the BravoCon performance in terms of size and scale. Leslie's eyes just rolled so far back into her head.
I'll call Stevie Wonder at the CW bigger than the BravoCon presentation, terms of stature. Lizzo was there too. That's pretty cool. But
Lizzo didn't do a performance. Lizzo was there. Stevie Wonder did do a performance, but it was Stevie Wonder and a couple guys in his band. It wasn't.
Yeah, 70 did that fit with what the CW's target demo is? Not exactly.
We'll get there at some point, I assume. Because I feel like we maybe need to steer things back in the NBC direction.
Yes. Let's wrap with NBC. So, in short, new series coming to NBC: the George Lopez comedy, Lopez versus Lopez, the Night Court reboot, and the update of Quantum Leap. Canceled: Kenan, Mr. Mayor, The Endgame, your favorite show, Dan, Ordinary Joe, and This Is Us is wrapping next week.
Yeah, and none of the trailers. I didn't think any of the trailers looked good. I thought The Last Resort looked fine. It looked like White Lotus meets Lost. Meets Palm Springs. The Matthew Fox show looked like the kind of show that NBC tried to air 50 different times like 5 years ago, sort of international thrillers. NBC had a string of them that failed where I can't remember any of them.
Like
Anna Friel was in one, but I don't remember what it was called. They just kept coming. It looks a lot like one of those. The Night Court trailer I thought looked excruciating. Like not even a smile in 3 minutes.
American Odyssey. Anna Friel couldn't
have come up with that in 100 years. But yes, that is 100% what it was. The Quantum Leap trailer. I thought the Quantum Leap trailer looked fine. I see no reason why that shouldn't be fine. But on the other hand, it looks like the sort of somewhat glossy reboot NBC has tried a bunch of times again, like 10 years ago, that didn't work. Like when they tried rebooting Knight Rider, when they tried rebooting Bionic Woman. This to me looks like one of those. And I don't know necessarily if that's going to work. And again, in broadcast television at this point, I don't know what working even looks like other than it comes back for a second season. What did you think of Seth Meyers? And because that's the other thing that at least people have kept going for this new version of Upfronts is bringing out their comic talent to say some snarky things. How did you think Seth did in the first of the week's snarky people?
Sure.
It honestly wasn't very good. And I think they.
But he's never the best part. I mean, it's always Kimmel. Hands down. And no one comes close.
No one does, but there are still imitators. I think it would have been. I'm just going to say this. I'm just going to every week say that NBC needs to be boosting Amber Ruffin's profile because I think they should be boosting Amber Ruffin's profile. I think it would have been a good opportunity to bring out Amber Ruffin, and they did not. I don't remember. Was NBC one of the 15 different networks that brought out Nicole Byer? I feel like Nicole Byer was part of three different upfronts this week.
Part of three. You know what? As we record this, it's Thursday afternoon. I can't remember anything that happened on Monday.
No, they all blur together.
I can remember what I've already talked about from NBC.
That's probably a sign of some sort for all of the networks is that Nicole Byer was there for three different shows. I could not tell you any of the three different shows that she
– three different things on Netflix?
And she has things on Netflix. I couldn't tell you what she was promoting at any of them. What I can tell you is – and everyone
should probably – she has a comedy on NBC.
And she is doing, with John Cena, she's doing...
Grand Crew?
She's doing Wipeout.
Is she in Grand Crew or is she... What's the other one?
She is not. I don't know what... I don't know all the things she's doing. She's doing many, many things. And her energy level is always fantastic. And people should probably keep that in mind when they're looking at people for future late night slots is I know that Nicole Byer's probably not everybody's cup of tea, but... yeah, she's very, very good with the high energy. And
well, she wasn't at CBS, right? Because they're the ones with the opening.
Yes, they are. And I feel like people have mentioned her. Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, she is on Grand Crew. So too many people, too many shows. But Nicole Byer cuts through with her energy more than anything else. And so I would give her some sort of job where she has to keep people awake. So a late night job would be either a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe she's a morning show person. Anyway.
If you're listening to CBS, you can credit Dan on that suggestion. Oh, God, no. Replace James Corden.
I've seen 55 different people suggest it before me. I continue to think move Trevor Noah up to that slot and give someone else the Daily Show. That continues to be my vote if anyone is caring.
Right. But, and we'll come back to Corden in a minute. But, you know, up next, let's take a look at Fox because they were second this week.
Number two.
Fox really got advertisers to come out into a New York theater right after New York issued a mask warning because of rising COVID levels. And then they went with an entirely pre-taped presentation, Dan.
You seem amused by it. I am just perplexed by it. And
why would you do that?
If I'd been there,
I'd be pissed.
If I had to put on pants for that, yes, I would have been vague. If I had to put on pants for a taped presentation,
it was like 90 minutes sitting in an uncomfortable theater in a mask. During a COVID surge.
Being told about how great it is that Fox News is part of the Fox family, I would have been angry.
Flipping a table.
I would have been very, very angry. I'm trying to remember anything that happened at the Fox presentation other than them telling me how great Fox News was, while at the same time, somebody correctly realized that you couldn't promote the most popular piece of talent on Fox News. So you have 20 minutes of, yeah, Fox News is great. Everyone loves Fox News. Fox News is fantastic, but no mention of Tucker Carlson because everyone's in the process of talking about Tucker Carlson and great replacement theory and what role he plays in the overall degradation of society. So someone at Fox had enough common sense to know that you couldn't promote Tucker Carlson, but boy, were they eager to promote Fox News. And so, yay.
Yeah, well, also missing from Fox's presentation was the fall schedule because the network didn't bother to announce one. So you want to go back and touch once again on how little these presentations matter for broadcast networks? There's a great example.
And they're big announcements or their big clips were from a bunch of shows that they ordered a long time ago. Like, great, I'm happy to finally see clips from Monarch, which was originally ordered in 2019, I believe you told me at some point.
Yeah, it was originally developed as part of Fox's script to series model, which, you know, you got to keep in mind, Fox is overseen by Charlie Collier, who came from AMC. AMC developed shows on a script to series model. So he brought kind of that development idea there because guess what? They're also spending money, you know, spending less money on scripted originals. So, you know, yes, you saw clips from Monarch, which was originally supposed to air this past season after the NFC Championship game in January and was rolled to this season after the network cited delays related to the pandemic. You also saw clips from the animated comedies Grimsburg and Crapopolis, which is just really fun to say. Crapopolis, I'll say it again. But again, those were picked up a long time ago. Animated shows, as we say, take a lot longer to produce. And two other new shows. They showed footage of Accused, which is an episodic anthology. They also picked up a show called Alert, which hasn't even been cast, let alone shot. So yeah, there's, you know, for a whole presentation about a network that has been scaling back on scripted over the last couple of years because of the, you know, the Disney sale. They don't have a studio anymore, or they do now, but they've, you know, launched one now, doing like co-productions with other studios. But for the most part, they don't own a lot of their programming. I think Monarch is the first one that they own fully, but yeah, they spend a lot of time promoting stuff that hasn't even been filmed yet or has been in the works for like 2 years.
Yep. Fox. We're home to both Fox News and Susan Sarandon somehow. So, hey, at least it's some level of diversity of ideology or thought or something, as Fox is about to discover that attempting to market a red meat, red state country music drama that stars Susan Sarandon is going to cause problems. I feel like someone should probably know that, but whatever. Maybe it'll work. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what works anywhere anymore. And I feel like that's probably been my takeaway from this entire week is I don't know what works. I'm not sure that networks do. I'm not sure these companies who pay their executives tens of millions of dollars know what works. What works, Leslie?
If I knew, you think I would be doing this podcast, Dan?
Oh, I thought you did this podcast for love, Leslie.
I do it for love. You're right, Dan. But no, I would be retired and on a beach in Hawaii somewhere if I had the secret sauce and knew what worked.
No, but, because then you would have a job that was paying you $10 million a year to make TV work. You can't have the permanent beach.
I would work for 1 year, get the $10 million, and then hang it up and go on a beach in Hawaii and throw my phone in the water.
That sounds good.
Let's be fair.
That sounds very good.
So you actually made a really good point when we were talking about one of the analysis stories that I did this week. Fox had no choice but to come out with this presentation and say, we are a dedicated broadcast network. Broadcast is first. We are a priority on our broadcast network. Come buy ads on Fox. We prioritize broadcast. And they're banging the drum and banging the drum. And it's like, well, yeah, you don't really have anything else. You have whatever the hell Tubi is, but nothing else. It's not like you have a cable network. You know, I mean, you have Fox News, which is, again, you've already covered that. Not something you're going to come out and boast about for 90 minutes. But there's no other – what else is in that fold? I think there was like Fox a hot Sport. Second no. for like the Fox – well, they did have Fox Sports, but like – but then they did like the weather. The Fox Weather Channel too was part of the presentation. And it's just like, come on, guys.
Well, it goes back a couple, you know, when the Fox breakoff and the Disney deal and all of that, when those pieces happened, there was the big thing about how nimble Fox was going to get to be because of its independence. And this year it kind of felt like they were kind of backtracking on that and going, yeah, we're independent, but we have these other things. We can still boast about this because otherwise we're just a lonely broadcast network, which was basically what the CW did. It put Fox in a strange position because if you've got Comcast, NBC, Universal, Shine Hartwig Company, etc., on one hand, and then, you know, we're about to go into the Disney monolith. Then we're about to go into the Warner Brothers Discovery monolith. Then we're about to go into the Paramount monolith. When suddenly Fox becomes this little tiny underdog, either you're going to buy that as the narrative, or you're going to go, it's really cute that you're a little underdog. You're about to get stepped on. And I don't know.
Yeah. So in short, Fox, looking at what's new, Accused, Alert, Grimsburg, Crapopolis, and Monarch, which technically not super new, canceled The Big Leap, Our Kind of People, and pivoting. And what was funny about Fox is at the end of the presentation, they had a blooper reel of things that, you know, obviously the outtakes from the pre-recorded presentation. And there was a bit in there about pivoting, which it's like, so they made them record something to be part of the upfront, and then they canceled the show. Pouring one out for the cast of Pivoting.
At least with Pivoting, I remembered that it existed. Several of the shows that were canceled this week, I had forgotten existed in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and that was a good cast. I will say that.
It was.
Up next, Disney.
Number three.
Yep, time to get to the monolith segment of our presentation, because we got three straight presentations where the basic theme was, yeah, we own absolutely everything.
Yeah. My favorite, absolute favorite part of the Disney presentation, actually it was my favorite part of the entire week, was obviously Jimmy Kimmel. And he was talking about all of the streaming services and everything, you know, Paramount Plus and Disney Plus, and everything's with a plus. And that he came up with a term and called it a plusterfuck. I cried. I was laughing so hard. It's my new favorite word. It's a plusterfuck. It's brilliant. That's it. We can wrap Disney up.
That was, and there we are, Disney. Heck, that's it for upfronts. Plusterfuck.
Plusterfuck.
It's clever. Got to give people some credit for some cleverness.
And he came up with that after contracting COVID a second time. So he zoomed into the presentation because he was originally planning to be there in person, but then tested positive the morning of the show, further illustrating why it was so fucked up. Pardon my French. Why it was so screwed up that Fox invited people to sit in a crowded theater for a pre-recorded presentation. So anyway, I digress. But Disney, you know, there were a couple of things that really surprised me. And one of the things that was highlighted was the Onyx Collective. That was, like, I think was one of the first things that was right out of the gate as part of Disney's presentation. And if you're like most listeners right now, you're probably going, what the heck is Onyx Collective? Well, I've talked about it a couple of times on the show.
I was going to say, if they're like most listeners, they've heard you talk about it before. Come on.
That is the production company like Banner, housed within Disney, that is overseen by Freeform president Tara Duncan, that focuses on underrepresented voices. And while they're not calling it part of Hulu, all of the content that is picked up via Onyx is going to stream on Hulu. It won't air. There's no plans to air it on linear to begin with. But they plugged a show called Reasonable Doubt with its unknown star. They trotted out Kerry Washington, who's producing two shows for Onyx and starring in one of them. Then they plugged Fleischman Is in Trouble. They trotted out Ellen Pompeo, who looked so bored to be there for what has to be your, 15th time at least out of the 19 seasons of Grey's Anatomy. Then they plugged a Hulu show with called the Chippendales, not to be confused with the actual Chip and Dale movie, animated movie. There was a whole bizarre thing where Amy Schumer pretended to be a member of the Kardashians.
Kami.
Sure. Yeah. And then there was the supersized sizzle with a lot of shows that no one knows anything about. So it's like, here, look, flashy new things. Look, this all looks cool. We're not going to tell you about any of them, though.
Yeah. And for the record, the underknown, not unknown star of Reasonable Doubt is Emeyazi Corinaldi, who has a great name that Kerry Washington was clearly enjoying saying, and people could know her from various TV shows. She was the star of Redline on CBS that I totally watched.
Canceled after one season.
It was a limited series. It was.
No, it wasn't. She said at TCA that was an ongoing show.
Yeah, whatever. It was Ava DuVernay.
Why do I remember that?
But I don't know. I'm like, you didn't watch all of it, at least. I totally watched all of it. It was fine. It wasn't awful. It was.
Spoiler alert, Dan, I didn't watch any of it.
I am aware, or I'm unsurprised, or whatever. Yes, the strange medley of programs with no identification of what they were, when they're airing, or where they're airing was a really odd way to promote a bunch of shows. It was just a blob of programming, which, if nothing else, is probably a metaphor for the entire industry at this point, is that it's all just a big blob of shows that no one knows where they're airing or what they are or if they've been canceled, or, you know, seeing bunches of premiere dates for season twos of things where I'm like, oh, that was a show that had a season one. And little known fact, I do this for a living. So I don't know how human beings actually are holding up on things.
But I do think that it really illustrates what our larger point is that broadcast just doesn't matter as part of these presentations, and what platform or network that they're going to air on, it doesn't matter, because it's all, if you want it, come to Disney, buy the bundle, it'll be here somewhere.
So, yes. So what else did Disney accentuate? Well, there was no mention at all of anything related to Star Wars, presumably because there's whatever the convention fan festy thing is that's coming up, and they make the decision that that's better saved for that. There was a big, exciting Marvel thing with Kevin Feige coming out for the first time, which was exactly the moment at which the feed was cut for anyone watching it remotely, because we apparently are not worthy of promotion.
This is what I don't understand. So they streamed, they didn't stream, let me start. This is what I don't understand, Dan. They cut off the live stream because they showed the trailer for She-Hulk in the room. And then they released the trailer, like the minute that it was over on social, and on, it was all everywhere. So why cut off the stream?
They were making strange choices, and generally corporate making strange choices on when trailers were going to come out, what they thought they were teasing in different ways. Like, so, okay, we weren't worthy of seeing the trailer for She-Hulk until 15 minutes later when it came into our inboxes, but we got to watch the first footage for Disenchanted and Hocus Pocus 2 on Disney Plus. I'm not sure if those have actually gone online yet, because we were told multiple times that they were in rough forms or something, but they didn't look particularly rough, or they didn't look more or less rough, or the She-Hulk trailer already has people freaking out about how bad the CG looks in that, and it's coming out in August. I don't have answers. Again, this is just going to be a running theme, is no answers, no understanding. People on the interwebs on Twitter have been already campaigning to attempt to Sonic the Hedgehog the special effects on She-Hulk. You know, if we complain long enough, will they redesign and redo this entire series that's only 2 months away from premiere?
Can we just talk about the title for a second here?
It's jokey.
She-Hulk, attorney at law.
It's jokey.
Tatiana Maslany.
It's jokey.
And nothing screams comedy like Tatiana Maslany.
Excuse me, Parks and Rec co-star, guest star.
Come on.
I don't know. She's not unfunny. I think actually I would say that a lot of her best parts on Orphan Black were when she got to be the funniest. She is unquestionably a talented comedic actress. On the other hand, the special effects do look strange. I am not in any way a fan of the comic, so I don't have any real sense of whether things are tonally similar to some run of the comic or another, or if the look is from some run of the comic or other. A lot of people seemed concerned about many aspects of the CG. To me, it looked a little bit silly, but if the goal of the series is to be kind of a lark, I have no problems with Disney Plus doing
it. It's a half hour, right? So it's a comedy?
It's definitely a comedy. I mean, unquestionably, if you look at it, it is very clearly.
I mean, I laughed at the trailer, but I don't think it was.
You were no.
I
you
laughed
were
the way that I was designed to laugh.
No, you were totally. Well, depending on what you were laughing, I can't say for sure. You were definitely supposed to laugh. It is supposed to be a comedy.
I laughed at how terrible it looked. There,
that's not exactly what they were going for. Then, in that case, no, it's a comedy. But whether it's going to be what its episodic run times are, I don't know that we actually know that. We'll find out.
Yeah. And this just in, Disney Plus is developing a new Daredevil TV show. So again, you want to talk about missing major announcements from the stage? Feige could have revealed this. This has kind of been speculated by, you know, the former stars of the Netflix Daredevil show, which is, of course, owned by ABC, which is Disney. So, of course, they're going to bring back what's his name? Who's what the hell? Charlie Cox. And who's the other guy who was in Daredevil? Vincent D'Onofrio, right? Well, did I get that right?
Definitely Vincent D'Onofrio is some. And well, Vincent D'Onofrio is
They've been in other projects. They've both popped up recently in other Marvel things. Marvel owns the property. It makes complete sense. They just re-added all the Netflix shows to Disney Plus and the Marvel Hub there. So, yeah, this could have been announced from the stage, too. It's not like it hasn't been speculated enough, and it's not like the actors haven't said similar remarks for months?
I'm just going to pretend that it was announced on stage, but it was just when the feed was off. And so and everyone in the room kept the secret, because that is the thing that upfronts are about, is people keeping secrets about things in the room.
Look, I'm a news junkie. I appreciate getting a big reveal on that kind of a stage, but that's not what this year's presentations were about. This was about scale and showing, like, come to Disney, you can buy an ad with Disney, and it'll be on eventually Disney Plus when that ad tier launches, Hulu, ABC, Freeform, Disney Channel, Disney Junior, Disney XD. I can keep going on, but you get the idea. It was about scale. And we'll get into that next, too, with Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount Global. But, you know, as for Disney, I mean, they also announced that the XFL would be coming to FX. Danny Garcia came out wearing a rainbow skirt, which may have been a subtle dig at Disney's handling of the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. I don't know. But
which
they doubled down on their commitment to diversity and inclusion, which we talked about with Onyx and everything else. But yeah, it was just, again, scale. I mean, did we see trailers for their new shows? ABC's got Alaska, the Hillary Swank newspaper drama. And they picked up a David E. Kelly show called Avalon that hasn't even been cast. A Gina Rodriguez comedy called Not Dead Yet. And the Rookie spinoff, Feds, starring Niecy Nash.
I think a couple of them were featured in the nebulous programming blob montage, I think.
Blobtage?
Yeah, Blobtage, but I don't know that all of them were. And it's kind of funny because, you know, say what you will, Hilary Swank is a multi-Oscar winning actress. I feel like you might want to promote that she's anchoring one of your flagship network's new programs, but... Or else you don't. I don't know anything, Leslie. That's what I came away from this week stupider than when I started the week. And there is no way that that is what Upfront Week is supposed to be about, making you less able to comprehend the industry that you cover.
You do wind up with a little bit of Upfront's brain mush at the end of these things. But
I don't even think it's that, though. I think it's everything was confusing as opposed to everything being illuminating or clarifying. There needs to be a second week where everyone clarifies the nonsense that they put out this week.
No, there does not need to be a second week of this crap.
And everything needs to be done at 8 a.m. on the East Coast.
I hate you so much, Dan. I am not a morning person. So if I'm a little punchy, it's because I've been up since 5. And that I wasn't aware that there was a 5 in the morning, only a 5 in the evening. Anyway, so wrapping up ABC, canceled Promised Land, Queens, Blackish ended, and Maggie moved to Hulu. And I've already run through the new shows. So also missing from the Disney presentation, a fall schedule for ABC. So you can find that on THR.com, but not at their upfronts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Number 4.
Up next this week, it's a super-sized, super conglomerate, media titan, ginormous conglomerates, Paramount Global, as well as Warner Brothers Discovery, two separate presentations. And then we're going to throw in the CW just for shits and giggles because, well, they're owned by Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery. So where do you want to start here, Dan?
I don't know. And that is probably once again representative of these things, because there was a lot of what are we actually doing here about these presentations, particularly the Warner Brothers Discovery, where the whole point was basically, OK, now we've been in business for 6 weeks. Let's talk about this. A year ago, this was announced. Now 6 weeks. We're huge. We're huge. We're huge.
We've got all these unscripted cable networks. We've got Discovery. We've got TLC. We have HGTV. We have Food Network. We also have HBO Max and Game of Thrones. But Game of Thrones wasn't a single dragon anywhere to be found at this presentation, Dan.
Or a single second of footage. Someone made a joke about dragons, but no one actually said the reason why we're making a joke about dragons is because we have an upcoming Game of Thrones series that we're sure people are going to be into. I mean, of course, not that HBO is ad-supported, so it doesn't have as much meaning.
But eventually there's going to be an ad-supported tier on HBO Max, exactly. Which means what? Are you going to be able to watch HBO shows with – can you watch the Game of Thrones with commercials? If you're an advertiser and that's a possibility, scream it from the rooftops if you're Warner Brothers Discovery.
Well, I mean, we already know that Game of Thrones shows will allow you to do product integration with Starbucks because we know that they're at least open to that possibility. So it's all kind of a gateway at a certain point. And maybe that's what we're supposed to have as a takeaway here. Like, I honestly would have run the Game of Thrones with the Starbucks cup clip and said, see, we're open to doing some somewhat unconventional things. Yeah, it was hard. Basically, the Warner Brothers Discovery panel was this, you know, it was This Is Us. It was here is the thing that we have become in the last 6 weeks. Take it in, witness our glory. Here's Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, I mean, again, no mention of Game of Thrones, no mention of Succession, no J.J. Abrams, no Greg Berlanti, nothing about the powerhouse that is Warner Brothers Television, nothing about what's coming up on HBO and HBO Max. They did trot out Mindy Kaling to preview her upcoming Scooby-Doo animated series, Velma.
But with no footage from Velma.
I mean, there was a still.
There was a still that people have been picking over because it featured a woman with her head cut open and a naked woman behind her. So that at least kind of gave an indication of tone.
And Velma's brown, which Mindy Kaling is out of shits to give, which is great. But also the big takeaway from this presentation is, well, first of all, HBO Max and Discovery Plus are not fully integrated yet, which could have been a huge announcement for this upfront presentation. But the big takeaway was, they're putting a lot of investment and focus into Jennifer Hudson's syndicated daytime talk show.
Yeah. Look, if you didn't know Jennifer Hudson had a syndicated talk show coming, then absolutely. They made that point very, very.
What
very,
if you do know, but you just don't care?
Then this was not the upfront presentation for you, because she kept coming out and she kept coming out. And
it was a little rough at times.
You sensed at every stage that she wasn't exactly sure what the actual talk show was or what its format was going to be. So at some point she was interviewing people and it was cumbersome. But really, every time she got out there on the stage with a microphone, she kept wanting to sing. Finally, at the end, she did Respect. And so everyone was like, "Ah, right, Jennifer Hudson. that's who we want to see." Maybe not Jennifer Hudson conducting interviews, but yeah, look, sometimes there's value in imprinting in people's minds that something exists. And I think anyone who was at that presentation now is fully aware that Jennifer Hudson has a talk show.
Right. Okay, cool. All right. So up next, let's go to Paramount Global, Dan. This is obviously the former Viacom CBS. So you're looking at a presentation that by all means should have included content for CBS, Showtime, Paramount Plus, MTV, Comedy Central, Nickelodeon. You get the gist. This is a pretty sprawling portfolio of cable networks. And instead, the presentation was built around a theme of 60 Minutes, which, yes, is a mega hit on broadcast. But I'll be honest, Dan, I dozed off.
It was based around a...
It was also at like 7 o'clock in the morning.
It was based around a premise of 60 Minutes. This one was at 1 Pacific, Leslie.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
It only felt that way. It only felt like 7 a.m.
This one was in the afternoon. So it was based around the premise of 60 Minutes, except that they didn't come close to wrapping it in 60 Minutes. It was like 72 minutes. In addition, and no one wanted to point out that 60 Minutes is 60 Minutes, but with commercials.
With ads, yeah.
So this was 72 minutes without ads.
A supersized episode.
Also, in the process, making most people feel genuinely uncomfortable for all of these 60 Minutes journalists who were there doing embarrassing promotional puff piece interviews masquerading as advertising supplements. I felt bad for every one of those people.
Let alone the fact that there's no way that would have happened, because it would be a complete and total conflict of interest.
Oh,
so journalistically speaking, I object.
I hope because not all of the 60 Minutes people actually made appearances. I hope that is because two or three of them said, yeah,
absolutely,
I'm not doing this. This is bad. So that was stupid. The major focus was probably on Paramount Plus, I would say, because there was a lot of time talking about new Taylor Sheridan shows. There was a lot of talk about Taylor Sheridan, not actually with Taylor Sheridan either interviewed or in person, because Taylor Sheridan is off making 15 different shows.
Yeah, but instead you got Kevin Costner to come out. Sly Stallone was there. No Harrison Ford or Helen Mirren. There was But then my favorite part of the whole Yellowstone Sheridan verse was that they did a diversity bit right after trotting out a parade of white folks from the Taylor Sheridan universe.
David Oyelowo was there, so he's got a show. So that was about that. It was all strange. They did a lot of coverage of Star Trek, which again is Paramount Plus. So you had most of the available captains. I wonder if William Shatner had other things to do. I mean, he has nothing to do with any of the Paramount Plus shows, but still in all, he is an established Star Trek captain.
And they have library rights.
Exactly. So, but instead, you know, you did have Patrick Stewart, Kate Mulgrew. Lots of Star Trek-y people.
And there was a CBS schedule at the end of it. Schedule. It was pre-taped and run through in like a minute, but there was a schedule.
It was remarkably fast. There were a couple successes this year on the broadcast slate. And so the networks tried to emphasize some of those successes. And so
Dan? Oops. I'm sorry to interrupt you. What was more awkward? The musical number that the cast of Ghosts did as part of the Paramount presentation, or whatever ABC was trying to do with the stars of Abbott Elementary?
Oh, the Abbott Elementary stuff was far worse, because the Abbott Elementary stuff was taking genuinely funny people, most of whom are capable of, on their own, producing good content. Like, I don't know who does the banter for most of this. And the ABC banter, the Disney banter in general, was excruciating throughout. The only person who very clearly had his own writers was Kimmel. So that was dreadful. If I didn't know Abbott Elementary and I watched that thing, whatever that was, I would find no amusement in it at all. At the very least.
Yeah, you wouldn't really realize that it was the biggest show on broadcast this year.
And every
publication, including us, and we had Quinta Brunson on the podcast, but everyone has done the Abbott Elementary broadcast rare hit.
Some people have done the same for Ghosts, which I'm sure, you know, CBS people would want to tell you is a bigger hit than Abbott Elementary. And, you know, it's all about.
They also don't own it. That's a Lionsgate show. Maybe it's a co-pro, but still.
They still brought the Ghost people out, and they did a musical number, which was very confusing because everyone was in character and they treated it as being in character. And it was a bad musical. But Rose McIver is always charming. That was strange. But look, there are a few successes, and so you acknowledge the successes and you pretend that other things don't exist. Like look at Fox. There have been years where, you know, past couple of years where it was all about, ooh, all we want to do is talk about The Masked Singer. There was basically no Masked Singer presence at all in the Fox blathering. They didn't bring out any of the judges, any of the hosts, none of that, because
no Rudy Giuliani.
They didn't bring out Rudy Giuliani to talk about his celebratory experience, etc.
Sorry, Dan, I didn't mean for that to be triggering.
Exactly. It just brought everything down.
Well, let's talk about since I've already brought the show down, Leanne Rimes closed out the
with Mickey Guyton. Mickey Guyton's a little bit.
What year did How Do I Live come out?
I don't know. You can Google that if you want. It was a long time ago.
Why?
The song is still in the core the key demo, I think. It wasn't good, and it was kind of a, I don't know, it was hard to explain what it was doing there. It was hard to explain why they thought that was going to be the climactic performance of their thing, whether it was better or worse than the performance, you know, than their various comic representatives. So Stephen Colbert was towards the top of the show, and he was a little funny. And, Corden was sort of in I don't give a fuck anymore mode, and therefore was slightly funny. When he's kissing up to people, I don't like James Corden at all. When he's not, sometimes I find him funny, and I think I chuckled. Like, I would put him in a tier below Jimmy Kimmel, but above Dirt. I don't know. it's all exhausting, and it's
so
all,
so Kimmel, Colbert, Seth.
I think I put Corden ahead of Seth, and I mean, like, in a general sense, I prefer Seth every day of the week and twice on, you know. So, like, I put Seth, and then whatever it was, I think Jimmy Fallon also made an appearance and was excruciatingly unfunny. So I always put Jimmy Fallon towards the bottom.
You put him under the Dirt, right?
Yeah, under the, yeah. You know, that sounds yeah, dark. Uh-huh. No need to go quite that dark. But anyway, for everyone listening, as always, Kimmel is the original and the best, except no substitutes. And yet we had to accept many, many, many substitutes.
So that wraps up Paramount Global. But since we're talking about Warner's and Paramount, let's talk about their redheaded stepchild, the CW, which is currently for sale. Mark Pedowitz, the CEO of the CW, held a conference call that he does every year with reporters this morning and basically said, here's what's going on. We don't have any update. We know we canceled a bunch of shows, but we saw it coming and we told our creators, you know what, if your show is on the bubble, which if you're getting this phone call, it is, plan for your finale to possibly have to serve as a series finale. And Pedowitz guaranteed that Legacies, which marks the end of the 13-year journey of the Vampire Diaries franchise, will have a proper ending for all of our Legacies diehard fans listening. And, you know, in a larger sense, you know, the presentation opened with Stevie Wonder doesn't make a ton of sense for the 18 to 34 demo that the CW caters to, but it was a fabulous performance. And then Pedowitz brought out the cast of his three new shows, and actually four new shows if you count Tom Swift, the Nancy Drew offshoot that was picked up last year. But this was basically either it felt a little bit like a farewell, because who knows what shape the network is going to be at, you know, once a sale goes through, if Pedowitz will be back, if anything will be the same. But this was, you know, almost like a farewell to broadcast at the upfronts, while also being a farewell of sorts to the CW. He brought out the cast of all the shows, saw the, you know, unspooled all the big sizzle reels, and called it a day. So, I mean, and then, you know, you brought out all three Supernatural stars who all have continued to have business with the network. It was fun. Awkward, nothing more than fan service. Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, it was business as usual for the CW, which is probably the network that's undergoing the most changes after canceling half of its roster.
But then it really was like what upfronts used to be. It was, here's night by night. And I mean, to some degree, they're programming seven nights a week. It's, you know, it's sort of seven nights a week in quotation marks because of whatever they're airing on Saturdays, and I think also Sundays is largely acquisitions, but they're still programming the nights. But they said, here's this new show here. It's a 3-minute trailer that tells you everything about every second of the pilot, exactly like they used to do back in the good old days. So, okay, here's our Walker Texas Ranger spinoff, which is entirely just a CW version of 1883. And so, yay, well done, you did that. A little show called Gotham Knights that I believe we both have some investment in.
Yes, this is going to be something you can call this a new drinking game if you're a friend of the five. Here's my disclaimer. Gotham Knights is co-created by my lovely wife, Natalie Abrams.
Woo!
Woo-hoo! Yes. Anyway,
so you got that, and it feels like it's in the DC brand for them. You've got the Winchesters, which is obviously a Supernatural spinoff, and looks
the
like
third that's time. Yeah, third time's the charm. It seems for Pedowitz trying really hard to get an extension of Supernatural going.
And Tom Swift is a Nancy Drew spinoff to whatever degree. So everything basically felt on brand. It felt like sort of versions of playing the hits. There wasn't a strange, here's one of our hour-long, slightly quirky comedies that feels like it should have been on the WB 15 years ago, which it feels like the CW has programmed one of each year and basically canceled all of them at different points. There was not a representative sample from that pool. But yeah, it felt like a good old fashioned CW upfront. It was done in under an hour, God bless. And everyone talked about how much they love Mark Pedowitz and how much they respected him. And
yeah,
and
you hear that next star?
And he was the only sort of broadcast executive of his position who was given that profile this week that I can think of, because
right, yeah, no Craig Erwick at the ABC at the Disney presentation. Susan Rovner oversees a big portfolio at NBC Universal, including Peacock and NBC. No Kelly Call at CBS. Who else am I missing?
This is what I'm saying.
Charlie was front and center at Fox because who else was going to do it?
Yes, there's no question. Fox and the CW were sort of doing their own thing this week. They were, and whether, you know, whether Fox feels good about being in that category with a half in, half out former Netlet, I don't know. It's hard. What a weird week, Leslie.
Yeah. Well, let's do a quick run through of the CW. So it was, as Julie Pleck called it, it was the Red Wedding at the CW WB last week. Batwoman, Charmed, Dynasty, In the Dark, Legacies, Legends of Tomorrow, Roswell, The 4400, Naomi, all canceled. Supergirl already wrapped its run. The CW announced this week that Riverdale's upcoming season will be its last. Still TBD, Tom Swift, which was promoted heavily, and Stargirl, which was moved up to the fall schedule rather than being a summer, kind of the bridge to the fall season. The network's schedule, you've got All American back to back on Mondays. Tuesdays, you've got The Winchesters and an acquired show called The Professionals. Wednesday, it's Stargirl and Kung Fu. Thursday, a double dip of Walker. Unscripted shows on Friday. Unscripted shows on Saturday. And acquired content on Sunday. So that's how the CW plans to fill the gap of all of those canceled shows. And if you want more on why the network canceled so many shows, you can go back and listen to like the last like three or four episodes that we've done. And there's also a great analysis up on THR.com that I spent probably far too much time reporting and writing.
Yes. Leslie did a terrific write-up, which was basically a write-up of what she instructed everybody about on last week's podcast. So depending on whether you like to listen to Leslie explain things or read Leslie explain things, it all comes out the same way in the end.
I went deep. And by that, I mean, I went back to the reasons why the network was created and the business model that they employed with it and how it no longer makes sense and why the network is being sold. So it's all part of that big story. So that's it on Upfront, Dan. Let's not do this again for another year. What do you say?
I'm 100% in agreement.
Up next, wrapping up as usual with the Critics Corner.
Number 5.
New releases this week, you've got Angeline, based on a Hollywood Reporter feature over at Peacock. Now and Then debuts on Apple. Whatever Night Sky Is debuts on Amazon. And we talked a little bit about broadcast this episode and a lot of series and come to their season finale and a lot of their series finale, including This Is Us, which ends its 6-season run Tuesday the 24th. And then you've got Ellen DeGeneres' farewell episode of her syndicated show a couple days later on the 26th. Dan, what stands out?
Okay, so I think I'm like 15 or 16 episodes behind on This Is Us, so I'm not sure I'm going to be able to catch up in time for that finale. I'm about 500 episodes behind on Ellen. I'm really not going to be able to catch up on that in time for that finale.
I don't
think
you need to catch up on Ellen. I'm pretty sure every episode stands alone, right? Sorry, sarcasm.
But what about the mythology? I don't know. Anyway, so yes, I've got nothing to say about those things. At least this segment, I don't need to be confused by everything like throughout the upfronts. You also didn't mention George Carlin's American Dream on HBO from directors Judd Apatow and Mike Bonfiglio. If you liked the Judd Apatow, Gary Shandling documentary that he did a couple of years ago, which was really, really good. So let's make that clear. This is not quite as good as that, but it's still very, very solid. It is 4 hours of lots and lots of clips of George Carlin being fantastic and prescient and brilliant, and lots of clips of fairly famous people talking about why George Carlin is fantastic and prescient and brilliant. And it completely works in that sense. You know, George Carlin was both wildly ahead of his time, but also wildly of his time. He was a person who shifted his persona as he felt he needed to over the course of four decades. And he left us with so many records of things that he said on various topics, but also with so many things where we only have to surmise what he would have said about them were he here today. But, you know, if your Twitter feed is anything like mine, you've seen, for example, him talking about, about abortion. That's a clip that goes around basically every time abortion rights are put in jeopardy. So every few months, those get recirculated and et cetera. So it's very good. If you are a George Carlin fan, it is worth watching. You will probably have seen many of the clips, but maybe not all. Definitely there were some early Carlin things back in his Carlin and Burns days. I always find it somewhat disturbing to see the George Carlin without a beard and in a suit from quality black and white television back in the day. And there's a lot of that. You know, there are interviews with his daughter who talks about his relationship with his wife, which was a lengthy and rocky but also nourishing relationship. His brother Patrick, who died earlier this year, was interviewed for the documentary, obviously, before he died. So there's good stuff there. So yeah, George Carlin's American Dream is very, very solid. Okay, so we're going to go chronologically. Eventually, I will tell you what Night Sky is, I promise, and then you will know. You still won't watch it, but I'll tell you. Angeline is indeed based on a great THR article by our colleague, Gary Baum, and large chunks of it were filmed in our former offices. And so if you're me, and if you're Shannon O'Connor, and if you're – yeah, pretty much that's it. You'll be able to watch it and see your former desks. So there's that. Yay. It's Emmy Rossum in increasing amounts of latex playing Los Angeles Billboard queen Angeline. And Angeline is a phenomenon who is difficult to understand if you are not a Los Angeles resident. You don't necessarily have a perspective of A, how ubiquitous her billboards used to be, of B, the frequency and genuine amusement of having an Angeline sighting. I have never actually had an – have you had an Angeline sighting?
I'm born and raised LA. I've had a few.
Okay. We all know you're born and raised in LA. I've never seen her in the wild. I've seen her car, and it's such a notable car.
I've seen her in her car and her.
I mean, I assume that if I saw her car, I assume she was probably in it, but I didn't notice her, but I did notice the car because it is unmistakable. It's a part of the LA culture that is a real thing that wouldn't make sense necessarily to anybody else. And so the series goes out of its way to kind of position her as the founding father of meaningless social media celebrity, sort of putting her down as being Paris Hilton before Paris Hilton, Kim Kardashian before Kim Kardashian, all the Kardashians before all the Kardashians. I don't know if that necessarily gives her too much credit or not enough, honestly, because I don't know, you know, she's made a persona out of it and she's obviously had some success, but Paris Hilton has made a life and career out of being whatever she is. Several of the Kardashians have become billionaires as a result of the celebrity they've gleaned from whatever it is that they do, also from money that they had in the family previously. You know, they're not self-made, whereas Angeline is self-made, and that is what's intriguing about her and why the story is interesting. I thought the last two episodes, which kind of try to understand Angeline in a deeper way, actually were pretty good. And there's an amusing mixture of absurdism, surrealism, fourth wall breaking, sort of Brechtian silliness. Emmy Rossum is good. She's kind of consumed by the latex. And so at a certain point, it really just becomes latex acting. You don't even see Emmy Rossum anymore, which is impressive on some technical level. But, you know, if she's trying to dig deeper, it doesn't always come through. The makeup on a lot of the supporting performers is pretty awful. All of the male characters are underwritten or badly written, which wouldn't bother me if they weren't taking up time and space. Like, if you don't, if your point is, this is a woman who was self-determinative, we're going to concentrate on her, please do, because that's the story. But all of these men in her life, I would just assume give them no time at all, because the presence that they have here is not very good. There's also a couple episodes at the beginning where you kind of suspect that they thought they were doing a longer series and that they had more time, because it's five episodes. And if you go back to early reports, some people were under the impression it was going to be eight. And I think you can see that maybe in the first couple episodes is the, we've got a lot of time to fill, so we're just going to spin our wheels. Whereas the last two episodes are very, very rushed, and they give the strong impression that there probably is a 100-minute movie of Angeline that would have been really good. This is hit and miss, and whether you concentrate more on the hits than the misses, I can't say for sure. I enjoyed some of it, but I don't know that I would really recommend anyone sitting through the first 3 hours, which I don't think are good, to get to the last 2 hours, which I think are decent. So I don't know. Also, if this has no meaning to you because you are not a Los Angelino, or you don't know Gary Baum, or your desk is not featured in the limited series, I don't know. So yes, so that is Angeline and Night Sky. So Night Sky on Amazon is the story of a aging couple played by J.K. Simmons and Sissy Spacek, who have been married for 50 years. They have a granddaughter who they're worried about. They have various medical problems that they have to go and get prescriptions for. And they have a shed off to the side of their house that has a bunker at the bottom where you go through a strange particle shifting elevator and you find yourself in an observation room overlooking an alien planet somewhere. So it is both a story about their relationship, but also the very, very strange alien planet that they have a portal to next to their house.
Is there a hole?
The bunker is sort of a bunker, so it's a hole-esque bunker. It has been augmented beyond the hole. In outer range, it is a no-frills hole. It's just a hole. Whereas in this, you know, there's a shed on top of it, there are high-tech doors, etc., etc. And then they get to overlook a strange planet. And so it's kind of an enticing blend of elements. And it kind of goes in this, the category of slow burn sci-fi that we've gotten a lot lately, where they want to be sci-fi and they want to have the big hook that gets people in. But then they want to be like, no, we're really about the people. In almost every case, it's really about faith, because in all of these cases, it's about what do you believe? How do you believe? What do you do when you have something you can't explain that is beyond the realm of human comprehension, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a bit like Josh Brolin's Hole or Outer Range, whatever you want to call it. It's a little bit like Invasion on Apple TV Plus, where basically there was an alien invasion, but mostly it was about boring human characters. In this case, at least you have Sissy Spacek and J.K. Simmons, and they are both tremendous because they're both tremendous actors, and you get them in scenes together and you go, okay, this is a couple that's been married for 50 years that has a shed with a portal to another planet off to the side of their house. So I kind of appreciated the way that the show built out those two characters and a couple other characters while probably denying people the actual sci-fi thrills that people are going to be curious about seeing. So in the first 10 minutes, they go through the portal and they see the alien planet. It's not like it's hiding it. I'm not spoiling anything by talking about it. But then for like the next 6 or 7 episodes, they only go to the observation of the alien planet like 2 or 3 times. They're doing a bunch of other stuff. They're like taking blood pressure medication and stuff. And that's kind of what the plot is at a certain point. And either you're going to be amused by this. In my review, I described it as being like Lost, if the hatch was found by Rose and Bernard, and they ultimately just decided they had other things to do instead of caring about the hatch. And if that's the kind of thing that amuses you, maybe you'll like Night Sky. I've now given a basic sense of what it is. it's probably an okay version of what it is. There's a lot of filler. It is definitely not close-ended. So I've seen 8 episodes, and where it gets by the end of the 8th episode is probably where most people would be hoping that it got after the pilot, honestly. So we'll see. I like the stars. That's kind of worth it. You've got HBO's George Carlin's American Dream. Totally worth watching if you're a George Carlin fan and if you liked what Judd Apatow did with the Gary Shandling doc. You've got Angeline, does get better, at least one good performance. The last episode is really loopy and silly and funny, and I kind of recommend it strongly, but I don't know that I recommend the journey that it would take to get to it. And then Night Sky on Amazon, old couple, 50 years buried, portal to another planet.
So, Josh Brolin's Hole.
Josh Brolin's Hole, totally different series. But on the other hand, can I say with any certainty that Josh Brolin's Hole does not in fact lead to the same alien planet that's in Sissy Spacek and J.K. Simmons's backyard? No, I cannot say that. It's part of the Amazon greater whole universe.
I see what you did there, Dan.
I don't know what I did there. I don't know anything.
The greater whole universe.
It's been a... It's been a long week, Leslie. So those are a few TV shows. And next week, I'll come back and talk about a few shows that people actually maybe are actually interested in. Things like Stranger Things.
I've heard of that one. Didn't Netflix just spoil that too? Yeah, we'll get into that next week.
I've heard rumors of that. But yes, I look forward to talking next week about Stranger Things and its 75-minute episodes.
Oof. Well, for more of Dan's weekly recommendations, be sure to subscribe to THR's Now See This newsletter and bookmark thr.com/TV-reviews for more. This feels like a good place to wrap things up. Thank you, as always, for listening to TV's Top 5, the Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast.
Be sure to subscribe on all of your various podcasting platforms. If you like us, rate us. If you really like us, write a little reviewy thing. It does help spread the word of mouth. We're always happy to chat with you guys on Twitter. Come say hi. Let us know what's working, what isn't working. And if any of the confusing things that we talked about in this week's podcast confused you and you wanted answers on them, I think next week would be a fantastic week for an upfront wrap-up mailbag. So if
or you have just any general questions.
Sure, that too. But I'm saying upfronts give people lots of things to be perplexed as hell by, because I'm still perplexed. Maybe Leslie will have answers for you. I promise I won't. But if you have questions, you can email us at tvstop5@thr.com. That's tvstop5, the numeral 5, at thr.com. Until next week, Leslie.
Until next week, Dan.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.